Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Bill. So as Bill said, I work at McLean Hospital, and I am a change agent there. So I apply process improvement concepts and lead work to analyze problems, develop, and implement solutions. And I wanted to tell you about a story about something that was successful that we worked on. I have no relationships to disclose. A little bit about McLean Hospital. McLean Hospital is over 200 years old. The mission is we're dedicated to improving the lives of people and families whose lives are affected by psychiatric illness. And we have a three-pronged mission: academic training, treatment, and research. Our main campus is about 10 minutes west of here in Belmont, Massachusetts. We're a member of Partners Healthcare and an affiliate with Harvard Medical School. And this year had the distinct privilege, honor, of being named the number one psychiatric hospital by U.S. News and World Report. McLean Hospital offers the full spectrum of psychiatric care, starting with inpatient services and going all the way through to long-term residential, partial, which is day programs, outpatient, and then there are lots of programs for kids, including the Arlington School. One of our famous graduates of the Arlington School is James Taylor. And I'm allowed to say that because he talks about it. This is an example. Now, this slide might go real quick because I don't know why it's built in like that. But this is a picture of one of our residences. Yep, see? I knew it. It did it every time. Someone else created that one. I don't know what the deal is. But this is a beautiful residence that's out in the mountains, it's near Wachusett Mountain, which is in the center of Massachusetts. McLean Hospital has 18 residential programs and over 230 beds for residential treatment. We have 177 for inpatient care. So just to give you some sense of the size of this organization, you'll see that we have a lot of programs scattered throughout the state, so I'll get to that. But the problems and why I was asked to work on this was that we weren't filling the beds, and we were hearing from our customers that it was difficult to get access and to get patients admitted. Initially, the executives that approached me asked me, why aren't the beds full? You know, these were their questions. Is this a marketing problem? In other words, are the phones not ringing? You know, what makes it difficult for patients to get admitted? Why are some people not admitted, and what happens to them? And how about people that we refer to other McLean programs? The challenges that we had is that we do have 18 residential programs and ever expanding. This is the first year in 10 years that we didn't open a new residence. We're going to open probably three next year. There's a decentralized system for residential admissions. In other words, every one of these programs has their own way of handling admissions. There's 18 phone numbers. So when you think about what is the residential front door, there are many. In addition to the 18 phone numbers, there's also a main line into the hospital, and there are a number of other places where someone might enter the system. We have a limit. Oh, so each program is specialized, and the hospital really values their autonomy of each of the programs, which is a challenge, but it's also something that I have learned to really respect. There's a limited central infrastructure and also no budget for change. And unlike our colleagues at the Harlem Center, what was it called?
Harlem United.
All of our processes are paper-based. Not very impressive, honestly. We're really, you know, you have to remember we're 200 years old and sometimes you can feel it. So this resulted in a limited ability for us to really know what is happening at our front door. Here's a map of Massachusetts, as promised, and you can see the spread of the programs. This sort of illustrates one of the problems that we have and what decentralization really means in this case. So Monica also did me a favor by setting me up here by explaining a lot about quality improvement and lean principles, so I can go through this pretty quickly. So some of the main things that I learned that really stick with me about lean concepts are, how do you, you know, who are your customers? And That's interesting to ask people. It really changes the way that they approach looking at the problems. How do those customers define value? What is the exact process that you're looking at? Really, defining the beginning and the end of the process is important. And also the emphasis on the process and not people, so not looking to blame somebody when something's not working. And they also emphasize really getting right in there and observing, sort of up close and personal, exactly how the process is working or isn't working. Where is there waste? And waste would include things like delays, workarounds, errors, movement, which is to say if you have to go from here to there to there to there to do a task, you know, how can you consolidate so you don't have to move around so much? And in this process in particular, the question of what's in their direct control really was front and center. And then acceptance, they say, you know, you could have the best ideas in the world, but if you don't have the buy-in from all your key stakeholders, it doesn't matter. Some of the process type of questions that I ask when I approach this project was, again, looking at value, what matters to these people, how does the process work exactly from one place to the other? And you can tell that it's not the same at each program. How many inquiries did they receive? They didn't have a way to measure this, actually. How do they make a decision to admit? Who makes that decision at each program? When are patients admitted, by day of the week, time of day? And what is in their direct control? This is a diagram that I don't expect you to really look at closely, but this is just an example of a tool that I use for just about every process that I try to understand and then improve. And that's it's a process map. So at the beginning, you know, there's a start and there's an end. That's an important point. And then in between, you can see there are a few decision points, which are in the diamond shapes. And this one is color-coded by role, who does that or who should do that. And then all the red type are new things that we introduced as part of this work. So typically you do a before state and a future state. This sort of combines the two of them. But the point here is that the process that we're talking about starts at the time that an inquiry was received until a decision is made to admit. It doesn't include the admissions process. Leading change, I turn to the model for improvement. And again, it will sound familiar from what Monica was talking about. So first, define what you're trying to improve. Then how are you going to know if your change was effective? And what changes can you make that will result in an improvement? So you look for best practices and you do your small tests of change. Our aim was to improve access to the residential programs and make sure that reliable processes were in place to receive and track all the inquiries and convert them into admissions, to increase occupancy, to match capacity to demand, serve more patients, and to direct patients to the best fit for care. So my recommendations to the sponsors were to establish performance expectations across the board that lead to excellent user-friendly processes and consistency between the programs, to optimize the organizational structures related to operations, and to use data for improvement and create the capacity to collect data so that we can tell what's really happening. The performance expectations included things like fill the beds, answer the phones, follow up with people, be responsive, cultivate relationships. And cultivating relationships in this case, it's probably worthwhile to add that residential level of care, in this case, a lot of these programs are self-pay, not insurance-based. So there's a big component of this being an elective visit for people. And oftentimes we'll find that people will contact us once and they're interested but not ready. And then they'll contact us back if we can build that relationship. And also directing people to the best fit for care. So organizational structures, I established an executive sponsors group, and I gave them the job to make decisions and to remove barriers. And then I developed a forum for the people who were at the front door who never had really even met each other. And we have been meeting for now a number of years, just about every month. I also enhanced the intranet resources so that people had a place to go to look for things like the standardized inquiry form that we developed together. And that inquiry form was the beginning of our online residential relational database. So that's an example of something that's a sustainable change. And typically when you look at things that are structural, you really find those are the things that are gonna withstand the test of time. This also dovetailed with the creation of a new position, a role of someone who's sort of in a navigator role. Anyone who doesn't know which residential program they want, but knows that they want residential care, can call this lovely person, Pam Thompson, and she will direct them. This is a screenshot from the inquiry database. It was, I made it with an HIS guy, and we're continuing to try to fix things about it. But it's the improvement here, and I didn't mention this before, but it's important to note when I said paper-based, what I meant, the difference between this and the system that we had before was people had little notebooks and post-it notes and things by their desk, and they would take notes of phone calls that they got, and they would do their best, and they would oftentimes get back to everybody. That worked for them. However, when you look at 18 programs and you think, but how can we know when you're not filling the beds? How do we know what the problem is? So that didn't work as we kept getting larger and larger, that system, we sort of outgrew it. And so having the database now means that we're able to answer questions about what happens at the front door. I created about 15 canned reports. That's about 60 or so measures. And you know, what is measured matters. We all know that. And I review all the reports at least quarterly with the leadership to try to encourage them to use the data rather than people's anecdotes about how things are going to guide decisions. And we created a transfer process within the database so we can tell when, am I going to get the 3-minute sign? When people are going from within a program to another program, we can tell what's happening. So this is one of the reports, and we don't have to look at it in detail, but you can see this is sort of what they look like, and there's a lot of them. This one has 5 different tables, and these are the first 2 tables. Also, the important thing to note here is this answers a question we weren't able to answer before this work started, which is when there's a decision not to admit, what happens to these people? So what have we learned? We have learned since March 2012, we've got over 7,000 inquiries that we can look at, and about 13% of these turned into admissions. And sort of once you know that, you can try to set a goal, right? You need to know something about how you're performing. And we've got about 40 referrals that came from within McLean that includes this new person, Pam, that I was telling you about, that went through her that became admission. So that's sort of closing up the black hole, you know, where instead of people being lost between programs, we can say they are making it in. And we know also now something about non-admission. We know the top 4 reasons. The first one is they were just looking for information or they weren't ready. We know who's calling also. We know if parents are calling or patients themselves or providers, and it differs depending on the type of care and also whether or not it's self-pay or insurance-based. And the cost and insurance coverage is the second reason. And then the communication breakdown is the third reason. It's not quite clear whether or not we're failing to call back or if they're failing to call us back, if that expectation was set. And the last one is that they actually, most of the time, require a higher level of care, which is to say, inpatient. There isn't nursing care around the clock at the residences, so if they're more acute, it wouldn't be a safe place for them. We did actually increase occupancy across the board, and this was a measure or a way of thinking about things that I introduced as part of this work also, which is instead of in order to equalize, you know, look across the programs, we have one program that has 26 beds and some with 8 and some with 9 and some with 10. So, you know, looking at the percent occupancy made the most sense. Are we filling the beds? Here's the percent that we're filling. You know, do we all agree that they should all be full all the time? No, only when it's safe and appropriate. But we can do better than we were doing. And we did. We did increase. And so I have reason to believe that the work that we did together contributed to this. It certainly wasn't the only factor. The next steps are to ask and answer even more interesting questions now that we know something about how our process works, refine the way that we're capturing the data and reporting it. We're improving the way that we capture census data, and we continue to identify and address any barriers to full occupancy. Thank you.